It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rider Rumblings podcast. There is a ton to digest, and I am very honored to be able to spend this time with legendary Rough Rider receiver number 18, Jeff Fairholm, a Rough Rider from 1998 to 1993. And a proud member of the team's alumni. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Rob. There's always lots to talk about in Riderville, isn't there?
Yeah, especially this. I don't even know where to start, honestly. it just keeps coming and coming and coming. I'm just interested in your take in general on the team. As someone I know follows the team as closely as you do, they're coming off a bye week. They've just lost to Edmonton. Well, not just lost, September 16th. They're playing in Winnipeg on Friday. What do you make of this team as it presently stands?
I don't even know where to start, Rob. I mean, it's, you know,
my dilemma too.
We came into this season with such high hopes. The team looked like it was rounding into shape really, really well. I even congratulated both Craigs, Craig Dickinson and Craig Reynolds, on putting together a wonderful team. And boy, it fell apart quick. I mean, we start off 4-1, but really we didn't play anybody. And then, you know, I was kind of waiting to see, you know, who we were going to play and how we were going to react to all of these different things. And boy, stuff just kept happening and happening and happening, and it piled on again this week. And now, I mean, we're not assured a playoff spot. And, you know, Montreal did us a favor by beating Hamilton, but, you know, being this late in late September and hoping that Winnipeg or that Montreal beats Hamilton is not, I think, how we wanted the season to be going. And, you know, I think it's somewhat of an easy fix, but it ain't going to happen this year. So, you know, I've heard some quotes by Fajardo in the media saying that, you know, when they make the playoffs, teams are going to be scared to play them. Well, I don't know about that. I think anybody would be happy to play the Riders right now. So it's been an interesting year for sure.
What do you see as the not imminent fix, but the fix to which you allude? What needs to be done most importantly?
Yeah, well, I say it's easy, but it's not. I mean, it's one thing. To me, it's the offensive line.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so porous. And when I do my pregame, like 7-minute deal pregame on the radio, I sound like a broken record, because that seems to be all we talk about. You know, it was the penalties. That's cleared up. But it's still... No, we got to give quarterbacks time to throw, and they just don't. He just doesn't have time to throw. I mean, even with his knee getting better and he's back to himself more, running around and feeling better, he just doesn't have time. And you know, he's gun shy back there. How do you not be? You know, I've said it before, and you and I guess differ on this a little bit. But I've said it before. I question his deep throw arm strength, but his medium and short game is fantastic, and the guy is tough as nails. But when you're on your back as much as he is, I mean, it's, you know, it's tough to throw from that position. So,
yeah, it seems to me, I mean, Craig Dickinson said a few times that part of the responsibility for the frequency of the sacks is that of the quarterback for occasionally bailing out of the pocket too early. But I tend to defer to what you said there. It's just human nature. How do you play with any confidence behind that offensive line? Isn't there the irresistible urge to flee that is reinforced several times over by the lack of pass protection That just seems to be a chronic
fight or
problem.
Flight, it's that fight or flight thing in the back of your brain or something.
Right? Yeah.
that old brain. Well, he needs to flight. He needs to get the heck out of there. And I agree with you. I mean, he's shell-shocked. And how do you not be? There's no trust. I mean, you need to have trust and you need to have leadership. And to me, that is what's really missing on this team. There's been so much drama this year. I'm not in the locker room. I haven't even spoken to a player, but my sense is the locker room is fractured. That's my sense with the whole Marino thing and, you know, everything that's gone on. I'm not blaming it all on the Marino thing, but that certainly started it. I get a sense that the locker room is fractured and the leadership, every team I've been on, the leadership has always come from the offensive line, and the offensive line playing as poor as they are, and the offense then playing as poor as they are, the defense gets uptight and they start pressing, and now they're starting to be scored on more and more. I mean, it's just, you know, this snowball is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's heading for a non-playoff game. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a month or two ago, we could look at the schedule and say that the important games down the stretch are two against Calgary and one against Winnipeg. If you're looking at the final four games, it seemed to me like the free space or maybe the week off would be the game in Hamilton. But to me, that is now the pivotal one. Who would have imagined it?
I mean, who would imagine it? And, you know, I can see them going, it's not a far stretch. I mean, I can see them going 0-4 or I can see them going 1-3. I don't see them going 2-2. They're playing three good teams and one that's, well, who I thought was on the uptick until they lost to Montreal, but they're getting better. So, you know, I nothing is for sure in this league. We know that when you're playing 18 games, you know, you're going to have down games here and there. But, I just don't feel good about this team right now, and I don't think anybody can. And there's just, like I said, there's just too much drama. You know, they're whining about the booing. They're whining about this. They're whining about that. I mean, there's a lot of good going on in Saskatchewan right now. I mean, I see things from Sankey doing wonderful things in the community. I see, you know, different players doing things in the community. But unfortunately, we don't talk about that. We talk about the bad things. So it's sad.
Yeah, it's the old. I've used this many times. Nobody talks about the planes that land, and that just seems to be applicable here. I'm not sure that there are enough planes have landed this year. I mean, it's just, if it was just an isolated incident or two, you'd say, okay, well, that's going to happen over the course of a long season. But when they can't even get through a bye week without something happening, you just shake your head.
Yeah. I am shaking my head, you know, and I just read on the news this morning that, you know, there was another incident with impaired driving, and it's just, you don't need this stuff. You know, they needed to get away from football and try to put this team back together for a home stretch. And, you know, here we are talking about bad stuff again. It's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, the first person to address the media after a bye week is a third string quarterback talking about, an impaired driving charge. I mean, that's just how backwards the season is. And maybe you should just expect the unexpected the way this. So here's Candy.
She just
got in for her walk. Maybe she just, it's almost like you said, you're watched by it the way this team is going. And, you know, I go back to the 89 team and I was trying to rack my three brain cells and see if there's any parallels. And there's a few in terms of the record. I mean, the 89 team that you were on started off 4-1 and then hit a bit of a skid at one point descending to 6-7, not too dissimilar from the 6-8. Record. There was a bottoming out in late September with the game against BC here when Glenn Suter hit David Williams late, pass interference, etc. That team spun out of it, finished 9-9, and got hot in the playoffs. But I looked at that team and I thought that, and I even recall thinking at the time that team had the type of potential to get hot at the right time because of the talent that it had, and you look at that offensive line that you had. I just don't see that there's the same upside or the same untapped potential in this team as there was in 89, keeping in mind that hindsight is infallible.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny. I was thinking about that too. I was looking back to that year and you know, we had a lot of drama in that year as well. But, you know, everything, you know, nothing's true before the but, right? But we had an offensive line, and that's where our leadership was. We had some great leaders on defense, don't get me wrong, but that locker room that we had, the offensive line took care of it. There was a situation in the locker room. I remember, I think it was 89, something happened in the locker room and, you know, a helmet was thrown or something like that. And Poley stood up and squashed it. I mean, it just didn't happen. You know, it just wasn't going to break this team. And, you know, maybe the team needs to find a reincarnation of Gary Greger. God, I can't believe I just said that. But you probably remember that.
Where's the tape?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we did believe. I mean, you know, it was one of those things that galvanized us. And, you know, dare I say, it actually galvanized us to a point where we're actually against that one person in some cases. But, you know, we had an offensive line that could protect. We had an offensive line that led the team. And of course we had an amazing defense, and everybody got hot at the right time. We had a chance, and, you know, we went in and played really well in the playoffs. But you, like you said, hindsight is infallible, but I have a hard time even dreaming that this team, the way it's built right now, can get through a playoff game at this point.
I mean, they're talking about how there's some optimism to be extracted from the fact that Dan Clark is likely to return this week. Logan Ferland's mm-hmm. a good bet to return. Taron Vaughn, you know, Cooper Richardson's played pretty well at right tackle in the two games he has played there. Do you see that there is enough time that remains for that offensive line to become at least serviceable enough that something is salvageable here?
I hope so. I haven't seen any sign of it yet. So it's hard to say yes, because we've gone through this many games with a quarterback running for his life. So I hope that it is. I hope it's not a strategy, but I haven't seen any evidence that would suggest that they will. So I'd have to say no. Until they show me that they can protect and lead this team. I mean, you know, there's no evidence right now.
You know, we talked a bit about Cody earlier, and that's always a popular topic in this province. And and there's a bit of a divergence in our opinions regarding that. You actually played the game, so I think yours carries more weight, even though I happen to carry more weight physically at the present time.
I don't know about that.
but he's it strikes me that at the very least, after that benching against BC, he's rebounded pretty well, considering the impediments or the obstacles that he faces in terms of that offensive line in front of him. I think he's played some decent football over these last four games and has resumed throwing the ball with some authority on those type of routes that you cited earlier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he has played well, and he's the Cody of old, and, you know, his knee's gotten better. I think the benching was a good thing for him. It also gave the fans a sense of what Mason Fine might be like. And Cody Fajardo is all we got right now. So, and, you know, he's a great leader. He seems like a great person. Everything I see about him and read about him, he's a great person. Man, he's tough as nails, but I don't care how tough you are. Again, it sounds like a broken record, but behind an offensive line like that, you can't show what you're like. And, you know, maybe he can get the ball deep downfield. I haven't seen the evidence, but he also hasn't had much time. So, you know, they've got an offense. You know, Jason Moss gets criticized for the play calling, and you and I both, you know, on Twitter get a little frustrated on second.
We have our fun.
The second and 10 call that gets, you know, thrown 2 yards, but that's the offense that we have. And I'm of the opinion, again, no real sense of I haven't been in the locker room or anything, but my sense is that Moss is calling plays to Fajardo's strengths, and what is going to make this offense work are the so-called yak yards, the yards after catch. And they expect these receivers to catch that 1-2, even minus 1-2 yard passes, and, you know, make the yards after the catch. And, well, you know, we've seen defenses come in now, you know, like Jones, where they rush three and get pressure, rush three guys and drop nine, and all they're doing is dropping to the yard markers and coming up and making tackles. That's the way you defend this team right now. And, you know, I'm still of the opinion you've got to loosen up that defense by getting the ball downfield, and that's not happening right now, or it hasn't happened all year, really,
other than
a couple of long ones.
Yeah, no, it's that has been those have been the exceptions for sure, and And I look at the game against Edmonton, and you cited the Jones strategy, and I just wonder if that really nailed down a template that other teams are going to use against the Rough Riders. Not that they hadn't been using them previously, but I just think that one, I mean, they rushed three men 72% of the time. And when they rushed four men, which was only 10 times, only 10 times all game did they rush four men. There were only three times all game that they sent anybody more than four. But over the 10 times that they sent the conventional four, they got four sacks. 40% of the time that they sent four rushers, they sacked the quarterback. And three times when they sent three, they got a sack. The eighth sack, I wouldn't necessarily, it's a sack by in terms of the stats, but it was a run pass option that failed. It was a running play that lost yardage. But I just look at it and the Rough Riders also play into the opposition's hands in this case by trying to bolster that offensive line by leaving extra people in for protection. So it's not like you've got say six receivers against nine defenders. Sometimes there's fewer because they're leaving in a fullback. They're leaving in a receiver to do blocking. So virtually everybody is double, or most of your receivers are double teamed. So what are you going to do aerially?
Yeah, offenses don't work when you got six, seven guys in to block and you're only rushing three and getting pressure. So, you know, offenses can't work. I mean, the math just doesn't work that way. A couple of deep balls that happened, I think it was against BC, where, you know, they actually blitzed and we, you know, Fajardo did a great job against the blitz and got the ball down, you know, in that zero coverage to Schaefer Baker, I think it was, who went down the middle. And, you know, nobody's blitzing anymore because that's, you know, the only chance that Fajardo has to get the ball downfield is to drop back and launch the ball as fast as he can and have trust that the receiver is going to run underneath it, like I used to do. But we had an offensive line that gave our quarterback that, you know, even just that millisecond more to get the ball out of his hands. So, you know, I think the defense is tired. I think the offense is tired. There's a lot going on in Ryderville right now, and it ain't good.
Jeff, to me, the entire season seems tired.
I'm tired. I'm not even running. It seems like all I do is talk about the offensive line. I wish there were some good stuff to talk about, but it's so hard.
Yeah, I've run out of words to describe it. You use porous, and I've used it several times. I've used leaky. I've used permeable. I need to find a thesaurus to find alternate descriptions of that offensive line because it doesn't stop. But that, to me, they knew it was a weakness coming into the season or coming out of last season, and they allowed 40 sacks in 14 games last year, and that was deemed unsatisfactory. This year, they've allowed 59 sacks in 14 games. It's what was a liability is worse. Like, that's the real issue. And I mean, they signed Natai Rogers. He played sparingly with Ottawa the previous year, ended up cutting him for half a season. They signed Jamal Campbell after he was let go by Toronto. He's barely even noticeable. The two major offseason moves they did make didn't pan out, and then you just factor in the injuries and just the fact that I think fundamentally that most of them just aren't good enough, and my goodness, but shouldn't they have seen this coming after last year?
And that's what I don't get. I mean, O'Day is an ex-offensive lineman, and they've got scouts, they got people all over North America looking for players, and you know, how do we not fix this problem? You know, it's been 2 years now where we can't protect the quarterback. And everybody knows, I'm not saying anything that people don't know, everybody knows that the team is only as good as your offensive line. It starts there always. And to not have an offensive line that can protect is mind-boggling to me. And you know, O'Day's got to take responsibility for that, and he better fix it, because I think his leash is getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, and I just wonder how short a lot of the leashes are going to be around here. I mean, I Jeremy O'Day and Craig Dickinson both have a year left on their contracts. You just wonder if this season continues to go along at this pace, if you know how many people are going to be served up as sacrificial lambs. And
I'm never a fan. I'm never a fan to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, but when it goes to 2 years like this, you know, something's got to be done. And you know, like I said, they're going to have to take a hard look. Now is not the time to do that, but I think they need to take a real good hard look once the season is over and see, understand what the plan is going forward, because this plan hasn't worked and it has to stop. So, you know, we've got a great defense. We talk about the linebackers. I mean, and, you know, and the linebackers have been fantastic, but you know what it's like when you know, as in a team sport, you keep doing your job, but sooner or later, when other people around you are not doing their job, it gets old and it starts to wear on you. And then all of a sudden your play starts to suffer, unfortunately, as well. It's just human nature.
You know, Craig Dickinson talked after the last game about how the Rough Riders are struggling on both lines of scrimmage, with the defensive line not applying the kind of pressure that's required, and the offensive line being what we've spent much of this podcast so far discussing. But they're missing Anthony Lanier the second, and that's hurt them. Say what you want about Garrett Marino, but that was a presence in the interior of the defensive line that is yet to be replaced. AC Leonard isn't having the type of year that he had last year, even close to it. Pete Robertson, since returning from injury, hasn't been as impactful. Charleston Hughes appears to be done. So, again, it's both lines of scrimmage. And I mean, it's as cliched as it gets, but football games are won and lost in the trenches. And when so much has been made about the offensive line, I think maybe the defensive line has been overlooked. It really hasn't been much of a factor either. And that's scary.
Well, secondary as well. I mean, the secondary isn't as strong as I thought it would be. I mean, Edom had he had the worst game I've seen him play.
My goodness.
The last game. I mean, he missed tackle after tackle, and he looked lost out there. And that's not like him. I mean, he's played pretty decent all year long. And yeah, that's secondary. But, you know, we've got three great linebackers. Yay. Can't make every, you know, by the time they're making tackles, the running back's downfield a little bit too. So, I think they're tired. I think they're mentally tired. They're physically tired. We've had a lot of injuries, and you know, the defense has spent a lot of time on the field this year, and you know, they're tired. And you know, the offense can't sustain drives over a long period of time. Yeah, every once in a while they do, but you know, they're tired. And I think I said that on multiple games on Twitter, where you know, the defense keeps having to go on, you know, two and out, and they're getting tired, and I think it's really wearing on them. So I mean, it's, you know, the whole thing is just going downhill. And now Lowther misses field goals. I mean, come on, like, how good has he been all year? I mean, you know, special teams have been good all year. And then, you know, really all we can talk about is Alford now. So,
yeah, I mean, I did a Mike Edom stat, and it was so uncharacteristic of him, like you said, but counted five tackles that were either missed or situations where he was engaged with a ball carrier and just couldn't make the stop. He got outrun, lost the angle or whatever. On those five plays, after it became Edom versus ball carrier sort of face to face, over those five plays, the ball carrier gained an additional 109 yards. So you're basically talking an entire football field or an entire Jeff Fairholm reception in the 1990 Labor Day Classic, 107 yards plus two, of yards after catch, with one guy either missing or not being able to make a tackle.
And then you add that to the 100 yards of penalties, and that's 200 yards. That's 200 yards of lost field position right there, and that's what it's about.
I mean, it was one quarter of Edmonton's net offense or total offense was on those, you know, yards after Edom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And
yards after Edom.
that's not him. But you know, you talk about the defense being tired, and when somebody is performing as uncharacteristically or atypically as he is, in that situation when it's just he's as a real sure thing most of the time in those situations. I think that speaks to what you're saying. It's just a defense that has been on the field too much and has had to carry too much of the load. And even Craig Dickinson's alluded to it. The defense is looking tired. And how do you fix that? Is a bye week enough to recharge?
No, it's not. And what they need, no, it's not. I mean, it's going to help for sure. We got some people coming back for this game coming up, and we need them because Winnipeg, we all know what Winnipeg's like. It's not the Banjo Bowl or the day after or the week after Labor Day, but you know, it's still going to be a high intense game, high intensity game. And we need people back, and we need people back to play well. So, you know, if Dan Clark actually can come out and play in this game, I mean, that's going to solidify the interior a little bit. But, you know, again, I'm an evidence-based person, and I don't see the evidence where they can stop those bookends on the outside on Winnipeg. So I think it's going to be a rough day again.
Yeah, it's been the tackles more than anything.
You can't fix it, Rob. I mean, it's got to fix in the offseason. It's too late now. We're going to go as far as we can, make the playoffs. That's goal number one. And then win one game. That's the goal at this point. And you know, that's all they should be focusing on.
Is there anything that can be done to scheme their way out of this?
I don't think so. I think that defenses have figured us out. They know what we're capable and more importantly, not capable of doing. So right now, no, I think the way to scheme us out of this is get some players in there that can play. And, you know, a lot of those technical penalties, I think that Dickinson said, you know, they're not getting the bad penalties. They're getting these technical penalties. Well, you know, when you get technical penalties, when you're not good enough, and they're not good enough. So you're getting holding penalties and those types of things because they're just plain not good enough. And they need to get some better players. That's not going to happen this year. You know, we added an offensive lineman to the practice roster. Never heard of him, but how up to speed is he going to be, you know, in a week or two or three? He's not. They need training camp. So, I don't know. It's going to be an offseason. I hate to say it, and I hate to be that negative person, but, you know, right now I think the season is damn near lost.
You know, and I have the same suspicion. There's a lot of optimistic talk coming out of the Rough Riders camp. I mean, what else are they going to say? But I just look at it on the surface, and maybe it's the Vanstone curse. It's the only hope they have left because I'm so notoriously wrong all the time. maybe there's a role coming here that's unforeseen. But if they had something to hang their hat on, they've been injured a lot. And again, I'll go back to '89. I mean, you were out, you know, for a significant portion of the stretch run. You know, Ray was hurt. You know, Dave Albright was playing, or was out and then playing hurt. Bobby Jurison was playing all year with a knee that required surgery like 2 days after the Grey Cup. There were a lot of banged up players on that '89 team, to the extent that Jeff Bentram was returning kickoffs and playing slot back. Rob Bresciani was called upon to start in Calgary one day, etc. You know, Jeff Treflin was playing linebacker at 170 pounds one day. That team, you know, was able to, you know, make ends meet despite a torrent of injuries. I just don't see that there's that same potential here with this team. It's a common denominator between '89 and 2022, but I just don't see where there's the upside.
You're talking about, you know, we're talking about a team, you know, I can't even do the math. It's so long ago. 1989 is forever ago. But you're talking about a different team. You're talking about a different era. And, you know, and you're talking, again, everybody that you mentioned there, I was hurt, Ray was hurt, you know, all these people came in and stepped up. The one thing you didn't mention was the offensive line. We, you know, our offensive line was always there. They were always ready. Nobody ever got hurt. You know, I think we played with the same five, maybe six guys the entire year. And was the bedrock of our football team. That hasn't changed in 30 some odd years. I mean, that is still football. And I don't know. I hope that never changes. And again, that's what they need. It's an easy fix, right? You ship out four guys, you ship four guys in. It should be an easy fix, but for 2 years it hasn't. And I hate to be the doomsday guy, but I got to be real, right? I got to tell you, you want me on this podcast because you want my opinion. Well, this is my opinion. And until I see evidence that it's going to change, I don't see a 9-9 team, and I don't see a 9-9 team winning the Grey Cup this year.
You know, you went back to the offensive line and how those guys never got hurt. I mean, Roger played more than, you know, pushing 15 years between injuries. Yeah. Mike Anderson didn't miss a game for 10 years, et cetera. Yeah. This year, it's just been one after another. And you know, Taren Vaughn is in, Taren Vaughn is out. And even when they've got the people in there that they think should be their starters, that they'd like to be their starters, are they good enough? And again, I don't know how to not to belabor the offensive line. I'm in the same predicament as you are. It just keeps coming back to that, no matter how much you try to talk about the circuitous issues.
It's not rocket science. I mean, it really isn't. It's just the way it is. So, yeah, I feel bad, but you know, it is what it is at this point. I hate that term too.
Yeah, it's but it's sometimes what are you going to say? And that's the thing too. We're 14 games into the season, and I just feel I'm in kind of the. I wrote that last week. I wrote that 3 weeks ago. I wrote that a month ago. It just, at some point, I'd like a new angle, but it's impossible not to default back to the same old storylines that seem to recur. I was so hoping, even from a storytelling standpoint, that they would come out, they come out of the bye week and there'd be something fresh and exciting and new. And right out of the gate, there's a bad news story. And it's like, you just wonder if this team is just, it's doomed. This black cloud seems to hover over it no matter where they go or what they do.
Yeah, it just seems to be like that. And it's the weirdest year I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm really following it this year more than I ever have. And it just, I don't know, maybe it's my fault. Maybe I'm the curse, but it's just a weird year. Everything just seems to be going wrong. They need some good luck. That's what they really need. And you know how you get good luck? You play into it. And that's what they have to do. They have to try to put all the distractions away. And that sounds cliche, but you gotta shut the doors. You gotta sew up that team in the locker room and go out and play football and stop worrying about who's booing. I mean, people are, you know, that's the other thing I'm concerned about. And I'm changing topics on you a bit here, but I'm concerned about the attendance. You know, I mean, the allure of a beautiful stadium, I think, is wearing off, and people are not going to games. I mean, it looked like a lot of empty seats in the last game, and you know, the excuses aren't there anymore. It's not summer anymore. I mean, the hay's in the barn, so to speak. And you know, people are not going to games. And you know how to fix that. You win football games. And they need to shut up, stop, you know, feeling sorry for yourself. And it's, again, sounds cliche, but they just need to go out and play football. And it's just stop it. Everything. Stop everything. Stop the noise. Stop everything and just go play. And see what happens. Because that's all they've got now.
It strikes me, Jeff, as a team that's very fragile, not only physically with the injuries, but mentally. It just seems it takes, whether it's Duke Williams mouthing off on the sidelines or just the propensity for penalties or some of the things that irritate them, even Nick Marshall saying things on Instagram. Like, it just seems to me like there's virtually no firewall with this team, if that makes any sense.
No, I totally agree with you. And thank God all that social media wasn't there when I played. Because we had a lot to say. I don't know how they do it, but boy, they need to get off of it. They need to they need to put together a team plan and together as a team and say, no, just no more. Stop. Okay. I know the fans want to hear it, but they need to win football games. Forget the chatting, forget everything else. Get in the locker room and go play. Shut the doors. That's what they have to do. And like I said, you got what you got right now. It is what it is. Use whatever term you want, but you got four games left, guys. Let's tighten this thing up. I mean, you know, it sounds stupid, but you got to toughen up. And the only way to do that is to hold hands and get out there and do it together.
What do leaders need to do in this situation? And you played for some teams that had such strong leaders. You were among them.
It's funny. I was actually thinking when you asked that, I don't think I was that much of a leader because I didn't need to be. We had guys that just, you know, if somebody wanted to change the music in the locker room, you had to go ask somebody first. I mean, I remember someone changed country music into something else. And Pulley went up and changed the channel and stood there and said, no, this is the way it's going to be. I mean, that kind of stuff, you know, we had all across that offensive line. And what do they have to do? How do I answer your question?
And who are those people? I don't even know necessarily who those leaders would be on this team.
Well, it's Fajardo. Fajardo's got to be.
That's the obvious one.
It's the obvious one, but it's got to be your linebacker and crew. I mean, those guys have to step up, and you know, it's one or two of the defensive linemen. But unfortunately, Dan Clark. I mean, Dan Clark is the leader, and maybe with him coming back, if he's back, maybe that'll happen. How do you do it? I don't know. I mean, everyone says the team or the player only meetings and stuff like that. Yeah, that helps, but you got to sustain that somehow, right? You going into there and you get all rah rah and you come out, yeah, let's do it. But how do you sustain it? And that's that's the longevity of the Dan Clarks of that offensive line that has to constantly be on people and constantly making sure that people are doing what they need to do.
What does Craig Dickinson need to do here?
I think he's done everything he can do. I don't think he's done a bad job. I mean, he's playing with the cards he's been dealt, right? And I think he's doing everything he can to every time he plugs a hole and another hole shows up in the boat, and that's all he's been doing. And I think he's coached well. I don't know what he's done, in the locker room. He's protected his players. They did everything they could with the Marino situation to protect him, and he just kept, shooting himself in the foot, and they finally had to do what they had to do. So I think he's done everything he can. I don't know what else he can do. I don't think he's the one that's the problem. I think that, I can't swear on this, I guess, but my dad used to say, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken, And that's, my wife hates that term because I use it all the time, but that's the thing. You got to go to war with what you got now. And unfortunately they don't have the soldiers.
Chicken fingers. No, sure. Let's go with that. Yeah, and that's, sure. I think Craig Dickinson has been dealt a really bad hand. Are there some things that maybe he could have done better? I think he's acknowledged that at times, but when you are faced, when you have to coach this team with its deficiencies, it is so much to ask of a coach. And I just get the feeling at the end of this year, it might be Craig Dickinson who's the one that is served up as the, okay, he's going to pay the price for this team, and they'll cite lack of discipline or whatever they have to cite, or the 4-1 start that got away from them. But to me, I just think it's a problem that is much higher. And I don't advocate the dismissal of anyone. I think people just need to do their jobs better.
I agree. And I'm, like I said, I'm never one to just start firing people. I think, I hope if they get rid of Dickinson, that'll be a crying shame. I think he's done a really good job. And I think they've got a terrific coaching staff that I hope they can keep together. Everyone complains about Moss and the play calls, and just put that in your head. Maybe he's calling plays that are suited to Fajardo's strengths instead of not. So just think about that. And I just put that out there. I think the coaching staff has done a great job. I have no issues there at all. I think right now it lays on O'Day, and O'Day's got to get better players so that they're not taking those dumb, technical penalties, I think Dickinson said. So I think that's what needs to happen.
The one thing that's irritating me with the play calling lately, and you'd understand this better than I because you've played the game, I am so sick of the handoff out of the shotgun formation on third and short or second and short. Why? Why is this done? I don't get it.
You and me both. I don't understand it either. Especially when the defensive line is a yard off the ball, you're giving them, you're giving that advantage back. And unfortunately, I don't get it either. I mean, I think coaches, I see it all the time. I watch a lot of NFL as you do. And I see coaches, they almost outthink themselves. They think that they need to do something. To me, keep doing what works until they stop you. That's always been my theory. And I think I heard it on your podcast last week. Just keep doing it. If the running game is working, run the ball. Keep running the ball. Why all of a sudden, until they stop you? Or why do they always have to, I got to do something different now because they're going to get on to me. Keep running it. Jam it down their throat. I mean, I understand I was a receiver, but you know what? Keep going to what's working and stop trying to overthink things, which I think happens sometimes. And that shotgun thing is just one of those things that they do. And it boggles my mind.
Sometimes I wonder if coaches are like, it's like those old detective shows when they're trying to out scheme the criminal, and they think that's what they think we're going to do. So, and again, I mentioned in the podcast last week, I saw Ronnie a lot. And Ronnie, if he saw a weakness, he would go at it, and he would keep going at it until they demonstrated they could stop it. And that was as basic as that.
It's football's a complicated game, but you can break it down to its simplicity, right? And that's what, if it's going to work, if you want to throw to Elgard every play, throw to Elgard. It's going to work every play. I mean, it's not rocket science, but you've got a playbook deep in the season now that's probably, you know, 300 plays deep. And, you know, they feel like they have to get to them all. They should know going in what's going to work and what isn't. And then you make adjustments as you go. You know, I'm not seeing that, you know, and for that's the one thing that you know, I don't like some of the play calling. And now you got two running backs that are hurt, you know, yeah. Talking about running.
Where does Hickson, it stop?
I know. Hickson's got a bad hand, and I loved him. I saw him in preseason. Loved the way he ran then, and I loved the way he was running. And all you got now, who's running back? I mean, who's going to be the running back? I mean, both Morrow and Hickson are out. I don't even know who they're going to play. So, yeah, it just keeps – I don't know. I keep going back and forth, and I'm just frustrated. I don't have the answers. Otherwise, I'd be making the big bucks like O'Day.
We should all hope for that kind of remuneration. Not knowing what the salary is, but suspecting that it's exponentially greater than mine.
Yeah, half kidding. So I'm enjoying sitting in a hotel room right now talking to you rather than having to go out on a practice field. So it's my life's a lot simpler, which is a good thing.
Where are you right now, Jeff?
I'm in Edmonton. I was in meetings yesterday and a couple meetings today, and I'm heading back home here shortly. So.
Tell our fine viewers or listeners what you are up to these days.
Well, I work for a company called Evans Consoles, and I am the regional sales manager for Western Canada. So we basically design and furnish command and control rooms. So things like air traffic control towers, 911 centers, oil and gas control rooms, things like that. So I'm not smart enough to do the systems and all the technology. I just do the furniture, fixtures, and equipment so that the operators, the people that sit in there, can be more comfortable in their 12-hour shifts.
What's it like to have an actual job? I just do podcasts and take down broomball scores for a living.
Yeah, you're so good at it too. Like, you came on this podcast, no notes, you're just ready to go. You know, I've been doing it for so long, Rob, and it's I've been doing it almost 20 years now with the same company.
Wow.
I love it. It's I grew up with office furniture. My father owned office furniture dealerships back east, and so I grew up with furniture, and this is a niche that I got into, and I absolutely love it. And dare I say, I'm pretty good at it, and I have a way of making sure that the customer's on, you know, just the most happiest person in the world, and we have a great product and great service. So what else can I ask for?
That philosophy could be very useful on some CFL teams I could name. That's another can of worms.
That's a whole other can of worms. I touched on the attendance a little bit, and you know, I think they need to do some work there. But you know, I'm all about the customer, and you know, that's what that's why I guess I'm pretty successful at what I do. So you know, it's all about the customer. If you take care of them and understand what they want, then it's a pretty easy sale.
Well, I'm sorry to take you away from those customers for upwards of 40 minutes when I asked you for a half hour.
My boss doesn't know I'm taking this time off.
Well, I'll just hopefully nobody's, for your benefit, I hope nobody's watching this week. I'll make you that shallow promise. So
that's all good. That's all good. I know how many people are on watch or listen to your podcast. So you do a good job, and I love listening to your guests, and I learn a lot too. Like, I'm constantly learning, and you know, I don't know, I certainly don't have the answers for the Rough Riders, but you know, listening to other people and you know, taking bits and pieces, I think I have a little bit of a better opinion, and it's not all mine. It's bits and pieces of everybody else. So you know, I'm watching, learning, and listening, and you know, hopefully I can do more of these. I enjoy it a lot.
Well, I learned from people like Tom Burgess and Ken Austin, who thought, you know, if I need something good, I'm just going to go to Fairholme repeatedly. You're the first repeat guest we've had during the 2022 season. So
really? Oh, that's awesome.
We talked earlier about if offensive coordinators, if something's working, keep going to it. So I'm not going to get any fringers here. I'm going right to Jeff Fairholme. So,
well, I'll have to check the mail more often. I haven't received my check yet. So,
well, it'll bounce like a newly manufactured basketball. So with helium in it. So I always
enjoy our talks, Rob.
Well, that's all I can offer you is compensation, except thanks. And maybe a few retweets. So
that's all I need.
I just have to read the outro here. I will be severely punished in draconian fashion. So here we go. Here comes my weekly recitation of this. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. Why haven't I memorized this by now? It helps us grow the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email me at rvanstone@postmedia.com and we'll read it on the show. I promise. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Vanstone. Jeff, you can be found at slotback18 if memory serves me.
That is correct. On Twitter, that's where I do a lot of my rider stuff. So,
I gotta memorize that. It's like the air traffic or the flight attendants when they read the safety demonstration. I'm sure they've done it 4 million times. They probably don't need to go off a cheat sheet. I feel rather pathetic there.
You know what's funny? And I know you got to go, but when we came back from Toronto after the Grey Cup and we were on the plane, everyone was happy. The flight attendant, we could call them stewardesses back then, but the flight attendant asked Mark Guy to stand up and actually do the demonstration. You'd think that being on so many planes and listening to it so much, it would have been easy. Well, he blew it really bad. so don't feel bad.
I was on that flight, by the way.
Were you?
Yeah. I went down there strictly as a fan, and it just so happened that our flight back from Toronto, Patrick Davitt and I were on the flight with the Rough Riders. We saw the epic pillow fight.
And that was fun.
That was an amazing bit of fortuitous luck to be on that plane that day.
The Riders are going to have to do some traveling, unfortunately, but hopefully they can stay at home and play in the last game of the year. Let's have some hope there.
Great. No, it's very well said, Jeff. And as always, I'm so honored and flattered that you take the time to be with us here. It's always great to chat.
Any time for you, Rob. You know that. It'd be great.
For number 18, Jeff Fairholme, I'm number 18 on the depth chart, Rob Vanstone. We'll do this again next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.